Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to talk a little about spraying around your yard, whether that means your lawn, your farmyard, around your grain bins. We're going to talk about all those things as we go throughout the show today. If you've got any questions for us, just call us here, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. And you can also find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so when it comes to spraying around your yard, I'll tell you, in my opinion, the three most important things. Number one, if it was me, I'd be spraying Tempo once a month around my yard and in my house. So Tempo is labeled to use in your house. It's labeled to use in all kinds of situations. It is one of the pyrethroids. That's from the chrysanthemum flower. Okay, so it's not some harmful pesticide that's completely synthetic. It literally comes from a flower. That is number one. Number two, I would absolutely spray my weeds. So in terms of spraying weeds, we really like Freelix. If you can still find some of that, that's the new 2,4-D that doesn't volatilize or drift. If you want to use a ground sterilant, so let's say that in your rocks, you want to kill the weeds for a year or two, there are products that you can use, like Hyvar, for example, but just understand that those things can leach sometimes. So if you've got a lot of slope, I don't usually recommend that. Instead, I'll usually say spray Roundup once a month. You'll kill everything there, but you don't leave any soil residual. You don't have to worry about leaching. You don't have to worry about it moving when you get a big rain or anything like that. And then the third thing that I would say is, at this time of year, this is a really good time to put down an insecticide that's going to have activity on grubs, even on mosquitoes and a number of other insects. So we already talked about Tempo. That's an insecticide for around your yard that'll kill. It will kill mosquitoes as well, kill crickets, grasshoppers, ticks, a lot of harmful insects. But with a generic imidacloprid, so in the past we've used Merit, for example, but any generic imidacloprid, that'd be just like Gaucho seed treatment. You put that on your lawn, you water it in with a full inch of water immediately so it gets down into the ground, and then you don't have to worry about bee kills or anything like that. But anyway, you want to put it on and literally that second start watering it. And the reason why we want to start watering it is so we get it down and get it working down in the ground. A lot of people end up with moles and different below ground big rodents, basically. Well, the only reason they're there is to eat the food, and usually the food means grubs or there are other insects that you can control with an imidacloprid. So you do that at least once per season, and generally you're in pretty good shape. Oh, one other thing that we get a lot of questions about in our region of the country is crabgrass control in Kentucky bluegrass. There are a few different products that will have some activity on that. Pendimethalin would. We really like Drive. That's worked quite well for us. You can also get a little bit of activity out of Tenacity. That would be like a generic mesotrione or Callisto. So got a few different options there. So anyway, in a nutshell, that's what I'd say, but we'll talk more in detail as we go throughout the show today. For now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, I got a couple of frost questions. Let me ask you a corn one first. This one comes from Tyler in Illinois. He said, I got a couple of questions for you regarding cool conditions this spring. First of all, we've got temperatures forecast to be down as low as 28 to 30 degrees on Friday. We got corn in the V3 growth stage, and even the late planted stuff is spiking through now. What's going to happen with that corn? And then secondly, we're doing some flag tests, as we've heard you talk about and heard other speakers, including Randy Doughty, discuss. If we wanted to get all our corn up in the first 12 hours or 24 hours and we planted 34,000, what would be an acceptable emergence? And then is there a number where you would say, if you only had that many, I wouldn't push that field very hard?
Oh, okay. So you got a lot of stuff. Let's start first with the frost question. I'll just say this. For corn, the growing point does not come above the soil surface level until you get to about V6.
If you planted it at least an inch and a half depth.
Good point. So assuming you planted your corn deeper than an inch and a half, you've got time. It's no big deal. You can get the entire thing frosted off. So literally all your V3 leaves can die off. You're fine. It's going to come back just fine. Now, sometimes we've had this and we've had guys go out and mow the tops off just so we'd get quicker recovery or whatever. But all I'm saying here is you are going to be fine. It is not going to completely kill the plant unless it gets down to maybe 20, 22 degrees for 2 to 4 hours. So it doesn't sound like that's going to happen for you. So that's that part. You're fine there. In terms of, let's see, what was the other thing that you had there? What was the second
flag
question?
Flag test.
Oh, yeah, flag test.
Planted 34.
I got it. There are a lot of people talking about this flag test thing, but so just for example, you mentioned Randy Doughty. Well, where Randy farms, when he plants his corn, very commonly it's 80 degrees in the daytime and 60 degrees at night. So that would mean you're going to have 20 GDUs per day. Right now, for example, on our farm, the high today is going to get to 60 and the low is going to be in the 30s. So we're going to have 5 GDUs today. So here's my point. When you may talk about 12 hours or 24 hours, okay, in 24 hours, you had 5 GDUs. In 24 hours on, I'll just take Randy's farm, for example, he had 20. So I don't really care about hours. What I care about is heat. If I can get plants coming up within a certain number of heat units, now I feel much more comfortable. So what I would look at is that. And rather than saying, oh, in 12 hours, it's got to come up. Well, if you have no heat units in that 12 hours, then of course it's not going to come out of the ground. And is the plant that's already above ground growing? No, that's not going anywhere anyway. It's not getting ahead. The whole point is, what you're checking to see is, do you have weeds coming up because they're coming up so much later, or is everything going to be good? So we'll have to talk more about that right after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio. We're going to be talking about spraying around your yard, but if you got any questions for us, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. Just to finish up real quick, and then we'll get to the phone lines. right before the break, we were talking about the question from Illinois about, all right, at what point are you going to call it and say, hey, my stand isn't very good, or my stand is good? How many of those plants, what do you say, 34,000, Darren, he planted? What's the cutoff? Okay, so a lot of people are doing this by hours and saying, well, within 12 hours, I've got to get 90% of the plants up or 95% of the plants up. And I don't think that's right. I think it needs to be within a certain number of heat units. So I would say within 20 heat units, then I've got to have 95% of the plants up. If that's the case, I feel pretty good. You know, what's the exact cutoff? Nobody really knows. Nobody really knows. So I'm just going to give you my opinion of 90 or 95% within 20 heat units. Darren, what's your opinion?
Well, I agree. You got to go by growing degree units and just see where you're at. If you could get stuff up within just a short amount of time, because if it's 85 degrees every day, that's a whole different story than if it's 55 degrees
right.
every day.
Yep, that's right. And last week, for example, our soil temp was hitting 70 almost every day, and we were having, we had, you know,
yeah,
that 80
degree
temp.
You're going to get good emergence then, and tighter emergence
yes,
then.
That's,
and the big thing is just you want them all to be within the same leaf stage if you can. If you get some that are a leaf stage or two leaf stages or worse yet, three leaf stages ahead, well, then the plants next to them are just weeds. So that's the big deal. You just want to keep them all at roughly the same growing stage. Hey, thanks for the questions, Tyler. Really appreciate that. That said, back to the phone lines here. We've got Jeff with us down in Missouri. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. You?
Well, pretty good. Pretty good. I understand you got some soybean herbicide questions.
Yeah. For pre-emerge pre-plant, how would Fierce with Prowl work? Didn't know. I was looking at the label. It looked like you could maybe do that.
Yes. Yep,
like
you can.
3 1/4 ounce Fierce and maybe 1.5 pints of Prowl.
Okay, so usually what we end up talking about, let's step back for just a second. What Fierce is for our listeners, it's a combination of Valor and Zidua. And Zidua is a group 15. A lot of times what we will talk about when we say soybean pre-emerge herbicides, we talk about the three pre's. We want to get Valor out there. We talk about Prowl quite a bit. And then the other one we usually throw out is Metribuzin. The reason we like the Metribuzin in there is it gives some extra kick on some of the tough Roundup resistant weeds like kochia, lamb's quarters, water hemp, Palmer pigweed, those kind of weeds. Anyway, I don't have any issue, Jeff, with putting Fierce together with Prowl. It's just that the Prowl and that Group 15 Zidua in there, to some degree, do kind of the same things. Neither one of them is like super strong on water hemp, Palmer pigweed, and I'm guessing in Missouri that's probably what you're after, but you tell me, what is your number one weed problem?
Yep. Water hemp.
Yep. So all I'm getting at here is you can do that. I don't have any issue with it. I like Fierce. I like Prowl. If it was me, I might consider adding some Metribuzin to it. A lot of times what we'll tell guys, and the reason why we usually save that Zidua or another Group 15 for early post, is you can use it early post. You can't use Valor early post. You can't use Prowl. Can't use Metribuzin. So we use all those pre, then use the Group 15 early post. But anyway, yeah, I mean, if you want to use Fierce together with Prowl, it's fine. There are some people that do it. Works okay. I don't have a big issue with it. All I'm getting at is if you want a little extra kick for water hemp, I'd probably throw just a little bit of Metribuzin with it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, we got John with us in southeast Minnesota. John, how are you today?
Hi, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well.
Yeah, we could use some rain here, but not too bad so far.
Well, it'll come. It'll come.
Oh, yeah. It'll probably come in buckets when it does.
It sure could, no doubt about it.
I've got a question on a biological. I just saw an ad in Successful Farmer that they were advertising this, and I've never heard of it before. And I was wondering if you guys had any experience with it. It's Pivot Bio Proven. It's supposed to enhance, attaches itself to the roots and pulls nitrogen out of the air. It's supposed to be more efficient for nitrogen use?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, there. We definitely work with some agronomists who have tried this over the last year or something. We're going to be doing a little bit of work on that on our farm this year. I know I was just talking with our research lead this morning, and he said, yep, got enough of that product to treat some acres up this year. So we'll see. We're going to do some comparison because there's a few of those natural or biological type products out there on the market today. We're going to be trying a couple different ones on the farm this year. So it'll be interesting to see when we do a little comparison.
Yeah, there are more and more of these biological products coming out. So for example, another product we're experimenting with that's somewhat similar to that is Anhydro. That costs about $5 an acre. The Pruven costs about $17 an acre. But you know, we'll see as we do more testing with this. From what I heard, the Pruven is already sold out for this season, but I mean, you can ask the guys around you and maybe you can find some. But I guess, like we say, we don't have enough experience on enough acres, haven't seen it across the country enough to say for sure this works or for sure this doesn't work or exactly where it fits. A lot of these biologicals coming out, they have certain fits, and if they're used in the right spots, we're fine with them. But when we use them in the wrong spots, we have a lot less chance for return on investment. And I think we can all agree on this, John, that the market prices for all of us grain farmers aren't where we'd like to see them. So we got to be really careful about what we're spending on the farm. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of biologicals that do have some promise. And so we're interested in doing more work with this as well as a few others.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks, John.
A lot, John.
Yeah, it is one of the things, as he brings that up with the biologicals, we have done a lot of testing over the years. We do testing here at Ag PhD in several different states. We've got a couple of really fantastic research people. And we work, of course, with farmers not only across the United States, but in Canada and a number of other countries as well. So a lot of times when there are new products that come out, we even get to work with them prior to their launch. Unfortunately, with this particular one that he asked about, we didn't get the opportunity to do that, but we are going to be doing more work on that this year because there's certainly been questions about that one and many others.
All right, Brian, we had another frost question here, yep. Or freeze question. This one comes from Doug in South Dakota, and he said, my ground for soybeans was tilled Thursday, April 30th, planted Friday, May 1st, put on a pre Saturday, May 2nd, Sonic, and then Monday, May 4th, we got 9/10 of an inch of rain to activate the pre, which
Perfect.
Sounds like a great way to start.
Yep.
However, now the weather's turning cold, and coming up the 8th through the 11th, we've got chances of frost with the best chance May 11th.
Okay.
Wondering what the potential of injury on my soybeans could be. My corn growing point should be below the ground, so I'm not nervous about that.
All right. Yeah, we talked about the corn thing earlier, and yes, you should be good on corn at this point, this early in the season. With soybeans, they're pretty tolerant. They're more tolerant to leaf loss than corn right away. I'm not talking later. I'm talking right away. And chances are you're going to be in the cotyledon stage. It would probably have to get down to 24 or 26 for at least 2 hours and more likely 4 hours before you'd actually kill a whole bunch of stuff in your field. Now, here's the other thing. So in other words, I'm not super worried when it's supposed to only get down to 28 or 30. I will tell you, for us on river bottom ground, we've always had more frost risk on river bottom ground, so we usually wait with that a few extra days just to be on the safe side for planting. Other thing I'll mention is tillage. He mentioned tillage. That is a good thing. Now, don't get me wrong. Everybody out there who's a no-tiller or strip tiller, we do a bunch of strip till too. You heard that and you go, what? Brian wants everybody to till. No, I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying when you have your ground black, you are much more frost tolerant. And I got a good story that I'll tell you about that right after this break. But I would just say this, and I've seen it for so many years now. The more residue you have in the field, the less heat is coming up off that ground, and the greater risk you have for frost when it's touch and go. In other words, when you're a degree or two or three from, hey, I'm going to kill my crop to I'm going to save my crop, that's what I mean by touch and go. It's really close. So that's where literally that difference between the tillage and the no tillage can make a difference. Even you'll see it around even where you've tilled, just on the borders of the fields where you've got grass, you'll see more death there. Well, we'll talk more about it right after this.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio. Going to be getting back to our topic, spraying around your yard. But we had a question right before the break about we've had a couple questions now about freezing temps or potentially freezing temps coming up and the impact on corn and soybeans. So I was making this comment right before the break about when you have your ground black, there's much more heat. So here's my story. This goes back to when I was in college,
Brian's college stories generally need to be edited here, so just for safety.
I'm giving you the clean version, but okay, no. Okay. I decided I was going to go skydiving. It was on my floor. It was this, there was a group of us, a very, very small group
of guys from the dorm?
Yeah, nice. That decided to go skydiving. So anyway, I volunteered to go first. We'd gone through a whole morning of training, early afternoon of training, and this was on April 30th, and I'm going to say 1987, I think is when it was. But anyway, so I jump, and everything goes fine. I'm down on the ground, and we had headsets. So my buddy was next, and I'm already on the ground. He jumps, and literally, it's like he's hanging up in the air. I don't know what, 1,000 feet, 1,500 feet above the ground. And I'm like, is he coming down or is it just me? Is he just stuck up there? What's going on? And they go, oh, I know what's going on. And so they talk to him and they go, okay, turn this way, go this. And I go, what are you doing? And he goes, well, did you notice he was over a plowed field? There's heat, so much heat radiating up off that plowed field on a sunny day that he got held up in the air. As soon as he got over pasture, no black soil anymore, he came right down. And it was, I think, one of the next couple of years in the spring, we had a late spring frost. Anywhere on our farm where we had no-till or around the borders of fields right next to the grass, I mean, it didn't completely kill the plants, but it killed a bunch of them. Anywhere we had the ground black, then the plants were just fine. And I just have always thought about that story of my buddy hanging up in the air, and I'm just going, what in the world's going on? And that really taught me the lesson of how much heat is coming off that soil on plowed black ground.
All right, well, plowed fields are one thing. Spraying around your yard is a whole different deal. We've got Richard Jaron on with us right now with Iowa State. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
You know, when you're thinking about weed control in lawns and gardens, there are quite a few different choices. And for farmers, they're familiar with a lot of the active ingredients that are getting used in terms of herbicides. But as you look at the cool weather that we've got coming up here this next week, just wondering if that changes some of the recommendations that you're making.
Well, you have, I would say, three main groups of weeds in the yard. The first group would be the annual weeds, like crabgrass. And then you have the perennial broadleaf weeds like dandelion, plantain, and clover. And then you have the perennial weeds like quackgrass. As far as crabgrass, which is an annual weed, we typically put on a pre-emergent herbicide in the spring, and that prevents the seed from coming up. That's taken care of. As far as the dandelions, plantain, the broadleaf weeds, we typically want to spray in the fall, because we get much, much better control in the fall versus a spring application. Some of the broadleaf weeds, like violets, they're really tough to control, so that may require two applications. But typically in here in Iowa, we're doing that sometime between late September and mid-November. And then the third group would be the perennial grasses that are weeds in lawn, things like quackgrass. They're extremely difficult to get rid of, because there's nothing selective that would kill them and not the bluegrass. So in that case, we have to either tolerate their presence or use something that's non-selective and spot treat like glyphosate. And then once those areas are destroyed, then we have to reseed those areas.
Yeah, it's no fun. I know we had some creeping Charlie on my great aunt and uncle's yard, and I know my great uncle had been trying to fight it with low rates of some kind of 2,4-D product, and finally he just said, I'm done with it, and he used some Roundup and wiped out the whole yard to kill a perennial weed like that. And, you know, with quackgrass, we've had some people talk about putting a tarp over that area and just trying to kill it out that way. Does that work? Can you get it done?
Well, you would have to stay there for several months, like probably 3 or 4 months at least. It's very, very hard to get rid of, because you have to destroy all those rhizomes in the ground. Any portion that survives that is going to resprout. Going back to the creeping Charlie, you can control that with a selective herbicide. Triclopyr is the most effective compound, but you do have to apply it twice in the fall, about a month apart. And if you do that, that weakens the creeping Charlie to the point where it basically winter kills.
Okay. Yeah, that's the nice thing about being in the north, is we've got winter as an advantage. If we can mostly kill weeds, we've got winter to come and wipe things out as well. You mentioned the crabgrass and using pre-emerge. We get a lot of questions about that, because there's several different treatments, things like mesotrione and a drive, pendimethalin, a number of things. Are there any favorites you've got there?
No, they all should be effective if applied at the right rate and the correct time. And here in Iowa, typically that's going to be sometime from mid-April to early May.
All right. Now, speaking about weed control, there's obviously a lot of gardens getting tilled up or already partially planted or possibly even entirely planted. We're always getting questions about what are some herbicides I could use on a broad variety of crops. Do you have some favorites there for the garden?
Well, in the home vegetable garden, it's more manual labor, not herbicides. So we're basically talking hoeing, hand pulling, that type of thing. And you want to make sure that you keep them under control where they don't go to seed. That's the last thing you want. And you can also use a mulch, because if you apply that, that prevents light from reaching the ground, and so you have far fewer weeds germinating from seed.
Yeah, those are good options, no doubt about that. We do see a little bit of metolachlor, we do see a little bit of trifluralin, but boy, there's some crops you can use that around and some that you certainly can't, and the timings are a little bit tricky, so it's not quite as easy as spraying for a whole field of corn, for example.
Right, where you have all these different vegetable crops, yeah.
How about with the new seeding grass? We get these questions too, and I think we just had one the other day. Somebody has tried to interseed some grass into an area that was kind of thin, but they also have some broadleaf weeds coming up. We advise them just to wait and hand pull for a little while until that grass gets a good start.
Well, we typically suggest sowing grass seed in late summer. That's usually the best time. When you sow grass seed in the spring, what you tend to end up with is far more weeds than grass, because the weed seeds germinate very readily, they grow very quickly, and they can kind of take over. If you do that, my suggestion would be go ahead and just keep it well mowed. That should kind of contain the weeds to some degree, and then take care of them in the fall.
Very good. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You do see more weeds coming with those springtime. Till it up and seed some grass in there as well. Talking with Richard Jaron with Iowa State. Richard, any last comments you want to make? There's certainly a lot of farmers out there that are putting off some of their lawn activities, and they're going to have to pay the piper at some point. Is this something that we just need to get out there and get done here on one of these days where it's a little too wet to be in the field?
I would say, as far as weed control on the lawn, the best thing they can do is just maintain the lawn nicely, because if you have a well-maintained lawn, as far as mowing and things like that, you're going to have far fewer weeds. The lawns that typically have the most weeds are those that are poorly maintained or ignored. They tend to have all the weeds.
Yep, totally agree with you. Richard Jaron with Iowa State. Great stuff. Really appreciate having you on the show today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, there's so many things, Brian, that Richard brought up. There are great tips in terms of keeping weeds under control. I love the pre-emerge applications to take out some of these annual weeds. A lot of the same things that we're doing out on the farm in our crop fields. I want to talk a little more about insects in garden and landscape as well as our show continues. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
It came in waves, ruthlessly eliminating the new spectrum of hard-to-kill grassy weeds in wheat. Everest 3.0 herbicide. A new formulation makes it brutal on yellow foxtail, foxtail barley, and other tough grasses. Everest 3.0 gets the weeds you see and the ones you know are coming, with flush-after-flush control. Ask your retailer about Everest 3.0. Wave after wave of grassy weed domination. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about spraying around your yard on today's program. If you have any questions, we would love to help you out. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Mississippi State University. You got Blake Layton with us right now. Blake, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to do that. How are you doing today?
You know, we're doing great. We're doing great. But we are a little bit concerned about stuff going on in the yard and around in the landscape, plants and so forth. We've got some insects that we wanted to question you on, if you're ready for that.
Let's go ahead. Sure.
All right. So Brian made a comment earlier, and he said, if you've got grubs in your yard, you better take care of them, or all of a sudden everything that eats grubs is going to move into your yard as well. So what are some tips for dealing with grubs?
And that is true. Now, down here in the South, grubs are less of a problem for us than they are in some other parts of the country. But we do have them, and when we let them go uncontrolled, we usually have problems with armadillos, which is a critter we have down here that loves grubs, as well as raccoons and other things digging in the yard. So for grub control, we try to target killing those young grubs when they're first laid in the yard. And these are the larvae of May beetles and June beetles. So that lets you know when these adults are out flying to mate and lay eggs. So if you want to get the timing right, you say, okay, let's apply our treatment in June and early July. So we get our insecticide out there when those little grubs are just hatching and real small and easily controlled.
You know, we do see a lot of those big beetles. We see a lot of Japanese beetles in landscape as well. And I know out in crop fields, what we do, is there a certain timing that you're trying to get? I would assume in landscape, you're probably concerned about bees and flowering and these kinds of things. So you maybe want to do it early?
You do, yes. And, that, you know, interestingly, that's another one of those regional things. We don't have many Japanese beetles here in Mississippi. They've just made it into the northeast corner of our state. That's just like one county, one or two counties.
Well, you can have some. We can send some down your way if you like, Blake.
They're working their way here. They're taking their time, but they're coming. We can see them coming for sure.
All right. I've gotten to spend a little bit of time at Mississippi State. My son and I went to bug camp down there, I think about 6 years ago now. And one of the things that my son was really interested in was fire ants. And he said, man, Dad, I'd love to take one of these ant colonies home and I could keep it. And he's starting to come up with all these plants. I said, whoa, we're not taking fire ants back to South Dakota. How do you deal with them when they're out in the lawn and landscaping?
And that is one of our toughest pests, and one that you can't ignore them because these are stinging insects. And if you step in that mound, you don't get stung just once. You get stung multiple times usually. And so the easiest way we have to control them is we have some granular baits that you can spread over the yard, and then the ants do the work. The workers gather up these granular baits, carry them back to the colony, and feed them to the immature ants, and they gradually get spread through the colony. So you want to use a slow-acting insecticide as the active ingredient in these baits, and so that's the way that works. It takes them a little while to work, but if you use them on a more or less preventive basis, you get good control season long.
Do you know off the top of your head what
about three applications a year?
Do you know what kind of products they put in those slow acting baits?
One is an insecticide called hydromethylnon, and then there are some insect growth regulators such as methoprene. Another insecticide is indoxacarb. Now that's a little faster acting, but it's slow enough that it can move into the ants. You don't want something like a pyrethroid that kills that worker ant before she makes it back to the colony with that bait granule.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know we talk about that on the agricultural side, just about speed of kill and those kinds of things and being important with different bugs. That's interesting about the fire ants that I didn't think about that. If you kill them too quick, they won't get back to the colony, and then you're going to just keep dealing with that. Oh, okay, so you said fire ants are one of your tougher ones. What are some of the other tougher insect species that you've got to fight?
Well, of course, we have a lot of termites here, so that's an issue for every homeowner. And that's just the thing you need to do there is just be sure your house is protected from termites, because if you don't have it protected, it will be attacked. And they can, if gone undetected, cause a lot of damage. They work slowly, but they work 24/7, 365.
I know there's different methods with termites. I know in some cases it's flooding hundreds of gallons of stuff around the outside of your house. In other cases, it's just real small, simple bait stations. What do you find that works the best?
You know, we use both of those methods here. The in-soil insecticides work really well. The advantage of those is once a homeowner has those installed around the house, has that liquid termiticide placed around the house, the longer-lasting termiticides will last 12 years plus.
Wow.
And so you've got this long-lasting control even if you do nothing else. The bait stations, they require maintenance at least annually, and some, depending on which product you're using, more often than that. But either of those approaches can work quite well as long as you apply it properly.
Yeah, we don't have near the termite problem here in South Dakota, but we definitely do have termites here. There's certain areas that we have to be really cautious for them, and I know that's something that even in the nearby town here that we live by, they do some treating for that. So I know it's a big deal around the country. How about mosquitoes? Are mosquitoes a big issue for you in Mississippi? And if so, what can a homeowner do?
You know, mosquitoes are an issue for us. I don't work with mosquitoes that much myself, so I'm not the go-to person for that question there, Darren.
How about ticks? Are ticks something that's up your alley?
The same deal. We've got a medical veterinary entomologist, and so we kind of divide our jobs. If it bites or sucks blood, I'll leave it to Dr.
Well, I think you got the better end of the job there, Blake, if you can avoid those guys. I've mentioned I was down at bug camp at Mississippi State. One of the cool things that my son and I saw, we went out into a tall grass area, and we were catching some different bugs and just studying what was out there in that habitat. And one of the things that was interesting is one of the people from the entomology department at Mississippi State had kind of what I would call like some rugs that he brought and drug through the grass that had some sort of attractant for ticks. And he was picking up all these ticks on it. And as soon as the kids saw him go through there, nobody ever wanted to get in front of him. They always wanted to go after him. They felt a lot safer. So I know that can be a big issue for your state as well.
I can tell you that if you go outside in Mississippi in the summertime out in the woods and weeds, you're probably going to get ticks unless you wear a good tick repellent. Yeah.
Okay, how about pesticide safety around the house and the lawn? We get a lot of questions from homeowners. Hey, I've got pets, I've got kids. I want to make sure I'm doing this at the right time. So if I have to do it in the evening so it's good to go by the morning, or if I have to do it on a weekend and then we're just out of town for that weekend, what's the best way to do it? And what's the safety level of a lot of these pesticides we're using?
Yeah, that's a good question. And especially for people in the ag sector, the caution I would throw out there is, you know, we get in this habit of we use these insecticides really often on our crops. We're familiar with the active ingredient, and we got that in our shed, and we know that active ingredient can also be used, say, in the vegetable garden. But you can't really go grab a little insecticide out of that jug and try to use it in the vegetable garden because variety of reasons. It may not have a label that allows that use. It may take a different brand name product. You don't have instructions for how to mix it. And also it's probably so much more concentrated that you just can't measure that small. So, you know, my first suggestion is to be sure that you have a product that's specifically labeled for that use size. So if it's a landscape ornamental plant, that it specifically lists that plant, or at least it lists trees and ornamental plants in the home landscape. If it's for your vegetable garden, be sure it's labeled for your vegetable garden. And there you got to be sure it's labeled for that specific vegetable crop as well.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of times we end up with gardens that have, well, we get emails all the time and people will list about 10 different crops in the garden. It's like, oh my goodness, good luck finding something labeled for every single one of those. But certainly from a safety standpoint, that's a really, really smart move to start with products that are labeled specifically for the garden, so you know you're in a good spot. Talking with Blake Layton.
Right. And I do have a couple of products that that I keep on hand from my vegetable garden because they're labeled on most pests in the garden and can be used on most vegetables that I grow. And those are things that contain the active ingredients permethrin or zeta cypermethrin.
Very good. Yeah, those are definitely active ingredients that our farmers who are listening today are really familiar with. Talking with Blake Layton with Mississippi State University. Blake, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the info and good luck here this spring.
Good to visit with you. Good luck to y'all.
Talking about spraying around the yard on today's Ag PhD radio show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree.
In the power lines! Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Been a fun show today talking about spraying around the yard, and it's certainly something that every homeowner needs to be thinking about for their area. Lots of different things. We talked about bugs. We talked about weeds here. And I want to get a little more specific in our home geography. We've got Paul Johnson with us with South Dakota State University. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Well, we got to hear a little bit. We talked with Blake Layton in the entomology department down at Mississippi State, and it was kind of interesting to hear a little about fire ants and some of the pests that they've got to deal with. And we talked with Richard Jaron at Iowa State about some of the issues that we're seeing in yards and a little bit in gardens. You know, in South Dakota, certainly we've got all of those types of things. We've got gardens, we've got lawns, we've got mosquitoes, we've got all kinds of stuff going on out there. What do you get the most questions on when it comes to spraying around the yard?
Well, actually, at this time of the year, the biggie is, you know, those yellow flowers that kind of start sticking up through the lawn. And if people didn't take care of them last fall, the dandelions are real big now. But actually, we're kind of, you know, those perennial weeds you can suppress them this time of the year, but fall weed control is very important there. What we're really getting into the time is to worry about crabgrass. As those lilacs start blooming, we want to make sure we got our crabgrass preventer on. We've got moisture now, and once the soil temperatures warm up, we're going to have crabgrass coming too.
Okay, so let's say you spread the weed and feed out there with crabgrass killer in it. Do you want to do it when there's dew on the leaves? Do you want to do it right ahead of a rain? What is the best way to ensure success?
Yes, dew would be good. Ahead of a rain would be absolutely ideal to make sure we get that moved into the soil and actively working, because the crabgrass preventers work by killing the weed seeds as they germinate.
All right, so there's a lot of choices now. I know we were talking a little bit with Richard Jaron down at Iowa State, and he said, you know, I think they all work pretty good when you look at the mesotrione in there, you look at pendimethalin. I mean, there's other crabgrass killers too. Do you have a favorite, or have you been pretty satisfied with the choices as well?
No, I really don't have a favorite. I will say, as far as long-lasting, when you get the pendimethalin or even the trifluralin, the ones with those in it seem to last just a little bit longer if we get one of those wet summers. But otherwise, all of them work good. And if we have a normal year, they'll usually last pretty much throughout the season.
All right. One last question for you, Paul. I know a lot of our acreages and farm places have got some trees around the outside, and we see some different weeds coming through. One that we've gotten some questions on has been wild cucumber that tends to grow up and around these trees. Do you have any good answers for that? Is that another fall treatment's best option, or what can we do?
Well, wild cucumber, amazingly, is basically, when you see that stalk going up and it's looking really gross, there may only be one or two stems down below, and it is actually a annual weed. It comes from seed each year, and so if you can whack that stalk with a machete or any type of a good weed eater early on, we'll take them out. That's going to do your best job. The problem is, you really don't want to be spraying in trees with anything that's going to readily kill it. Very likely you could hurt the tree.
Oh, Paul, I got a bad answer from Richard Jaron, too. He said in the garden I was just going to have to do some manual labor. Now you're telling me I have to do manual labor in my trees as well. I was hoping for an easy answer.
Well, to be honest, like I said, if you get those early, the time it's going to take you to rig up a sprayer or anything like that, you can take the machete out there and have it done before you even get a work up a good sweat.
All right. Hey, great advice. Paul Johnson of South Dakota State. Paul, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Look forward to talking to you later this summer.
Sounds good.
All right, Brian, I think we kind of hit the spraying around the yard pretty well. We've got a few more questions that have come in. We'll dive back into the mailbag here. Got one from Mark in Nebraska. He said, I'm wondering, are more microbes killed by tillage in a tillage situation or being oxidized on the soil surface and the residue not being able to be incorporated and broken down in tight, compacted, no-till soils?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to vary. I don't have an answer for that. I will say this. We were just talking, I think it was about tiling yesterday. Far more microbes are killed because of poor drainage than because of tillage. So that's why we talk about tiling all the time. I don't care if you're no-till, conventional till, strip till, whatever. Have good drainage and you're going to have a lot more microbes out there. And do things to help the microbes, and what that basically means is do things to help your crop, because the more crop you raise, the more your crop kicks sugars out into the soil for the microbes. So there are symbiotic relationships going on there, but if you have poor crop conditions, chances are you have poor conditions for good microbes, and you are going to have a less healthy soil. Darren, can we get that corn bean planting depth question that came in?
Yes.
I want to talk about that today.
Yep. Got another email that came in, and this one is from Minnesota and from Jeremy. He said, does corn planting depth have any effect on how the crop does later in the year? Now, mainly I'm concerned about drought tolerance. We have lighter clay soils around a 10 CEC, planting the corn at 2 inches deep and getting it into the moisture, but we're seeing some neighbors going with an inch and a half depth on corn to try and get faster emergence. On our soybeans, we're planting inch to inch and a half. Just wondering if planting a little deeper there might help us more with drought stress.
I really don't think so. Now, these are two very different crops in how they root down, though. With corn, yes, the main root system is going to come out above where the seed is planted. And so that would lead you to believe that, well, the deeper I plant, then the deeper the roots are going to be. No, they really aren't. I don't care if you plant at 3 inches, 2 inches, inch and a half, your roots are all going to, the nodal roots are all going to come out within the top roughly 3/4 of an inch right below the soil surface. So it doesn't matter. The plant adjusts. What makes more difference is how wet you are to begin with. And I was just talking about tiling. We've got to have that water table down, number one. Number two, we've got to have our compaction reduced. If you have those two things, then typically we're in good shape. The other thing that a lot of high yield farmers talk about is let's farm more of your soil. So in other words, lead your plant down with fertility. Where's your fertilizer at? This is one of the things we've been discussing for quite a few years now. If all your fertilizer is in the top 3 inches, 4 inches, something like that, well, you're going to get some plant roots going down, but how big are those roots ever going to be? Because all you're getting down below is water. It's sure nice if you also have some fertility down there too. Okay, now let's turn our attention to soybeans. With soybeans, that is a little bit different in terms of where the start of your roots is going to be. So it's not a big deal, though, whether it's at an inch or an inch and a half. We're not talking a lot of difference. Either way, your roots are going to get down fast. I'm not that worried about it as long as we have the water table down and you have at least reduced compaction. So the last thing that I will say is if you plant too shallow, let's come back to that now with corn. Soybeans I'm not too worried about, but corn, that can make a difference because now some of your nodal roots will come out above the surface of the soil, and you will find that typically you have a plant that's more, it's not going to maybe yield as well. It is more prone to lodging later, so I'd worry more about the lodging than the drought tolerance thing if you get too shallow. So never, ever, 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 ever plant your corn less than an inch and a half deep. And personally, I think about 2 1/4 inches depth is about ideal. If all other things were equal and I could pick one depth, I want to be at 2 1/4. But we always tell you in the range of 1.5 to 2.5 inches, that's typically considered ideal for corn.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Had one more. It's from Samuel. He said, talking about landscape here, I've acquired some land for residential property. It's very, very salty. Should I worry about my building being impacted by the salt? And what can I do to help reduce salt in a residential area?
Yeah, I don't know by salty how salty it really is. ultimately, all buildings can be affected if drainage is super poor. So you got to do everything you can to make sure drainage isn't poor. That's where we're usually talking about sump pumps and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I'd want to see a soil test.
If we can improve drainage and build up calcium to try to help move things out with something like calcium sulfate, that would probably be my idea.
I don't think so. I don't know that it's worth doing anything when it's going to be residential and you're going to put a building there. We'll do more research on that before tomorrow.
Thanks, Samuel. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.